Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jan, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the recent Socratic email class. Welcome, Jan.
Thanks, Jan. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. So I thought maybe we'd start just briefly for folks who may not have ever participated in such a thing as a Socratic email class, maybe to just briefly talk about what that is.
Yeah, it's pretty wonderful for anyone that hasn't done it. Well, you know, the way I think of it is it's bringing whatever issue or anything in life that you want to look at through practice, that's the invitation, to bring that as an issue for the, and the guide then provides guidance, whether it's a content that you're looking at or process. Mm-hmm. And well, that's what I love about it, I think, is that it's up to you, yeah, whatever it is you want to look at. Wherever you are in your practice, that's just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, truly, truly. And then over the course of the interactions, you get to really explore that, go deeper, get the guidance, practice with it, come back, get the guidance. Yeah, exactly. Lovely.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. The process is, well, the generosity of the guide is sort of astounding because she's
really
responding to so many different people. But yes, I mean, for myself, what I took this last time was just looking at the process of doubt and what would I, you know, where did, how to explore that. And so that's what I'm guided through. And I just, well, I want to back up a second because for me, what happened at the beginning is, oh, I've done these, you know, the voice I heard, I've done these Socratic email classes several times. You know, I really don't have anything that's up right now. But I know.
Exactly.
I know.
Red flag, red flag. Yeah.
When I hear that, and it isn't going to matter what I bring to it. It really doesn't matter. Content or process, I'm going to see a ton.
Yeah. I'm going to see so much because I could just stop right there, turn around, and look at that. Right? The thing that says, well, I don't really have anything to look at. And so, and, you know, all the beliefs there are in that, all the everything. Right.
Yeah.
So brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so
the other
you
thing,
chose. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Please go ahead. Yeah.
Well, no, just that I choked out. And then I don't even, I just, all I can think of is to say that the guide graciously guides us through looking, how we can look as deeply as possible for wherever we are. To look at that, whether it's content or process, but always bringing it back to process because in the end, at least from my experience in this class and others, I can apply been guided to look at this particular thing can then apply to almost anything else. And that's the treasure of it. One of the treasures.
Oh, that is so true. Say more about that, Jan. So in other words, it sounds like what you're saying is, so in this case, you chose to look at a process. You looked at the process of guilt. And so over the course of six interactions, you're writing in about what you're saying about that. You're getting the guidance. You're taking that. You're looking at that. You're writing back in again. And then what you just said is so interesting that what comes out of that exploration is not just, it's not as if, okay, great, now I've solved the content of guilt, but rather that you've seen so much about the process, and then that can be applied in other places in your life.
Yes, yes. Well, for me, it was doubt. Guilt would apply, though.
Oh, sorry. That's right, doubt. Right, we could just switch. Yeah.
No, it really doesn't matter. Because, so now I've been guided through that, looking at that, and I can take the process that the guide put me through in looking, I can now apply to anything I want to investigate. As an example, at the very beginning, it was, doubt. Well, when does it come up? And when I identified that, that's when you want to be ready. If you know those are the circumstances that usually happens, you're going to just go into the next, for me it was an activity, go into that next activity with full attention, just waiting to see how it comes up, what it does. That looking, that kind of looking, I can apply anywhere now. I mean, not that I couldn't before, but the specifics that the guide
yeah.
provides, the process that we're put through just allows for so much to be seen and, again, can be used anywhere. Yeah, and there's another thing I want to mention is it isn't just right. my, you know, my process that I get to see. Yeah. I get to read everybody else's submissions and Sherry's responses.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
is like bonus after bonus after bonus, because what I like to do is record and listen about other submissions mm-hmm. and Sherry's responses. I just do as many as I have time for, because
yeah.
I'm going to have the advantage of seeing things I may not have seen before, or to
yeah.
go deeper with things that I'm familiar with that others have brought up.
Exactly. Isn't that extraordinary? When you were first saying at the beginning about how you get to choose anything, right, and then you get to have a series of exchanges with the guide around it, I just had this image of how extraordinary it is that as a Sangha, you know, as you said, there's so many folks who participate in a class like that. So as a Sangha, it can feel almost like there was a deck of cards and we each picked one. And each of us represents one angle of how the suffering happens. And
yeah.
together, there's this extraordinary tapestry. I mean, every single email class is literally a book is written. And it's
mm-hmm.
amazing to get to read response after response after response after response. And I'm with you, getting to record and listen what we each see about our own process in what is being pointed at in each interaction.
Yes, and that's exactly right. It's like when we're in group, we get to be looking within,
yes.
In this case, as we're reading the, you know, the submissions and Sherry's response, we get to look within of how does that apply here? How do I recognize that? Do I not? If I don't, I want to look for it. I just feel like it's so generous both for those participating and the guide. Yeah, responding. There's just a,
yeah.
well, we're looking at generosity this month, aren't we? It just seems like a huge process of that going on in all directions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that point you made earlier also of just the guide sitting there with, I mean, hundreds of interactions, you know, over the course of the class. And I think it was Ashwini who was talking about it on Open Air, maybe less recently, but just that place of, wow, the presence that represents, and that we all get to benefit not only from the response to our own inquiry, but to everyone's, is really an amazing process.
Yeah, yeah. And the patience, I at least for me, I don't know what I'm getting in the way of patience, but that's what struck me, is the patience that the guide has to say the same thing as many times as it needs to be said, in as many ways as it needs to be said to each of us, till we start to see, or maybe we don't, but that often.
Right. Well, but that's so well put. And till we start to see, right? It's just till the illusion just wears away. And I really appreciate the way you put that, because what I saw was, you know, anytime someone says that to Sherry, I always hear her say things like, and for her, it's new every time, right? Because it's what's arising now. And it's received that way. Because even though, you know, we say the same things in practice, we hear the same things in practice, in this now, it's exactly, I mean, all the time people will say, wow, I've heard that so many times before, but suddenly it just really hit. And that's the whole thing. It's suddenly we're really here for it. And so when it's brand new in this moment, it really goes in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why when I hear at the beginning of anything we're going to sign up for, you know, that, oh, it, you know, you don't really need to, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, because everything is new every time and there's always something to look at. So well, the guidance has helped me to see that over the years anyway. All the different ways we get it, you know, whether it's Socratic email or year-long, and just so grateful.
Yeah, right. And when you said the year-long, it just reminded me of how much people, especially lately, have talked about the how helpful it is. We call it repetition, but I think what we were talking about recently is it actually isn't really repetition, because it's, as we just said, it's new in every moment. But in other words, you know, so the voice wants to say, well, I've done a Socratic email class. Well, I've done that retreat. Well, I've done that, whatever it is. And yet we haven't, and we get to see more and more and more and have the experience that you were talking about a few minutes ago, where you now have this new tool, in a sense, this process tool of, okay, I see how this process of doubt works, and I have an expanded awareness of where that's probably going to show up. So now, next time I'm going into that situation, I can really be heads up. So now that I've practiced that with doubt, now I can practice it with this, with that, with the other thing. And now that's another tool in my tool belt.
Yeah, yeah. It just, it only gets better. Delight is the what keeps coming, dropping in for me. The delight of that kind of practice, because it the more we do, the more fun it becomes. I don't mean to, it doesn't give it enough credit. The more fun it is. The more delight there is in the looking.
Yeah. Well, Jan, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about your experience.
Well, thank you, Jen.
All right. Take good care.
Go happy. Bye-bye.
Go happy. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Jan. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi there. I enjoyed that conversation about the email class. Reminded me of my participation also.
Mm-hmm. There's so many good things about it, right?
Yes, Michael.
So many good things. The process view, the Sangha, wisdom, the perfection of now, and really there's always something to be looking at, and whatever it is that I'm looking at is right here in this moment. And, and of course, the generosity of the guide in really being there for us whenever we want to look, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And I was really getting the Sangha sense of it all, in the sense of, you know, my own process is endlessly fascinating and dreary and boring and repetitive, and I also get a window on all of the rest of Sangha and what they're seeing and what they're exploring, and it really takes it out of the small mind, the places that I get stuck, to see a broader perspective.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So I think we'll be looking forward to the next email class, which I believe will be coming up soon.
Wow. Wow. That's exciting. And I have announcements here.
Great. Thank you.
Join us this Sunday, July 19th, as we practice facing fear with compassion and companionship. Facing and Embracing, a workshop on fear, is free of charge, but please register by noon Pacific this Friday, July 17th. Bring the kind, compassionate support of the privileged environment into your daily life through a 4-week group coaching class beginning in August. Participants in the Living the Privileged Environment at Home class will engage in specific practices that support being present. The virtual class will be held on Mondays, August 3rd through 24th. Taking care of our bodies and minds seems more crucial than ever in these current difficult times. An at-home gentle yoga series provides support in cultivating and/or strengthening a regular practice of stewarding the body. These brand new yoga sessions, which run from August 14th through September 4th, incorporate themes from the year-long retreat and other elements of awareness practice. For these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today, Ashwini. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, please press star 6 and then 1 to make guest show. And conversation on one topic, please. And about 5 minutes is great. Okay, I think that covers it, Ashwini. Are you ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Ashwini. It's Elizabeth. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey, I wanted to speak about something that happened on yesterday's daily call. And it was something sort of just, I won't say very much, but basically felt like the facilitators kind of jumped on a guy for being in a conversation when he got unmuted.
Uh-huh.
And I saw that I felt really bad. It didn't feel compassionate to me. So I just wanted to speak up about it, that it didn't feel good.
Uh-huh. So you were aware of where you went to when that happened?
Yes, and I'm also aware I have karma and projections around being publicly shamed.
Uh-huh. Being publicly shamed, so that was the projection.
It was.
Uh-huh. And so what do you think about that, Elizabeth?
Well, it's something I mean, other than it's a projection and an issue I continue to work on, not anything in particular. But the reason I wanted to speak up is because it just didn't feel like a compassionate, there was a compassionate reaction to the person.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, Elizabeth, so a couple of things about that. You don't know, for example, because of that projection, that it might have been an attempt to protect the person who was on the call. So that as soon as we found out that someone was unmuted and was doing something else, we would not want them to be exposed.
I definitely didn't think of it that way.
Well, that really is the only thing we're looking at in terms of process, right? Because whatever is going on for me, and I recognize that it's a karmic process, then that's really the only place for me to be looking. Because as long as my attention is on that karmic process, there's really no ability for me to have another perspective. I would project, right, that it produces a very uncomfortable situation for you or sensations for you or experience for you. And so there's a way in which, because what conditioning does to you in situations where this is classified as public humiliation within quotes, you know that experience for yourself, and therefore it's also part of your karma to make sure that you go out of your way not to let it happen to anyone else. And I would further project that it is very important for you to point out that other people should not do that because it's not kind. But all of that are parts of your process that you can look at because clearly it's a place of deep suffering for you.
Yes. It is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, as we've been talking about in the email class, right? So that's the content. Public humiliation is something that you don't appreciate, you suffer with, and you don't want, and it's, there's a tendency to project that onto other people. And so if you were practicing with it, how would you practice with it?
Well, there's also the aspect that even if it is a projection, my own projection and my own projected experience. Even so, I do believe it's important to speak up when I experience something, but when someone else is treated uncompassionately. So there's two aspects.
Right. But again, if we take back to that's a behavior that arises from a belief that it's important to speak up. And so if we're practicing awareness, that's also something that I want to be able to examine. Is it appropriate to speak up? What are my beliefs around the appropriateness of speaking up, right? So I guess the point I'm making, Elizabeth, is that as practitioners of awareness, the focus of attention is not on fixing content or believing content as much as using everything in your experience to see how you were caused to suffer so you could drop that and end suffering for you, not end suffering for someone else. So speaking up, that's an interesting behavior, belief, assumptions. You can examine that and look at, is that something that leads me towards suffering, or is that something that leads me away from suffering?
I guess I'm not sure why I would look at that belief, because it seems kind of self-evident that it's very important to speak up even if it's a projection, but still to speak up if we experience someone being treated uncompassionately.
It doesn't matter, because as a practitioner of awareness, any belief implies that it's worth looking at, right?
Uh-huh.
Not just the beliefs I believe are good beliefs, and so acting from them makes me the good, right person, and anyone not acting from them is not the good, right person, or whatever we believe our conditioned or believe or conditioned to believe our motivation is. So perhaps you can look at the identity that makes it really, really important that you speak up. Because I project when you don't speak up, the voices say something to you. When you do speak up, the voices say something to you. You're in a conversation about whether or not you speak up or not. And there's a lot of suffering around speaking up.
I can look at that. Right now, it's my practice, and I'm working with my Zen awareness coach on speaking up, you know, taking every opportunity I can when it arises that I need to or want to or feel called to.
Uh-huh. And so then you get to, I would project that the way we're training with that, it's what we call A-B testing, right? So I have a lot of voices that tell me not to speak up. So as a workshop, I speak up and then see what I see about that. I don't speak up and then I see what I see about that. But the point is not speaking up or not speaking up or perpetuating the belief. It's paying attention to what I see about how the voices or the conditioning is controlling me.
Okay, I hadn't looked at that because, like, all my heroes are speaker-uppers and, like, you know, in all, you know, social situations or historical situations. So I want to be like that for myself.
Uh-huh. Well, and here's the thing. This is a slightly humorous comment, right? The only things that you've heard about is when they did speak up. You've never heard of all the situations in which they didn't speak up because they didn't speak.
That is
right?
True. Yeah.
Right? It's like, who wrote the story? The person we say the winners of history always write the story. Well, if you heard someone say something, then that's when they said it, not all the countless times they didn't say it. And that really is awareness practice in a nutshell, right, Elizabeth, because it's what we started out with. My original projection blinds me to the possibility that anything else exists. I ignore every other possibility because I'm convinced that the only thing that exists is what I can see. And the reason to step back from our projections or beliefs or conditioning is to see the world as it is, which might actually be more than my perspective.
Okay, well, I'm going to go back and listen when it gets posted tomorrow and record our conversation and just listen it to a bunch.
Excellent, right? Because that's the way that's why you called in. So here's what I'm seeing. Let's look at it from all of these different perspectives and see what we see about it. because there might be something I haven't seen, or I actually want to look at this some more. Because we're always processing, right? There are no conclusions.
Yeah, right. And of course, my worst fear is that it would happen to me. You know, I would be unmuted or something, and what happened
right.
on the call would happen to me.
Right. Well, and of course, always, right, Elizabeth, there's that place of, well, you're going to get on the phone and call it out and perhaps not note that you're doing to the facilitator the same thing that you think they're doing to the caller. Right?
I hope I'm not being uncompassionate in any way.
Right, exactly, right? But that's what we don't see, that we're sometimes doing, because we're projecting from that place, speaking up might be doing the very same thing that you don't want anyone to do to you, or you don't want anyone to do to anyone else. Right? So that's another thing to be looking at.
Am I doing that? Is that what's happening, or?
Well, you
or just
look
a positive. Okay, I will.
Right. Great, wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. And Ashwini, I just love that. There's something that I'm looking at, and so then I call in and explore it and see what's there and see what I see and continue the process. No conclusions.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, Michael, the thing is that in this practice, we can talk about anything, right?
Yes.
If we're willing not to take things personally, we can look at anything as
yes.
a place of information. And as long
yes.
as I don't get identified, then I'm actually in a plot, in the process of discovery and exploration about my process. And so everything is just what it is, which is information, period.
Yes, yes, exactly. And what I just saw when you said that is that if I can sidestep the self-hate and all of the conditioning that is trying to pile on, then I will truly see things and learn stuff and be open.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And we have another caller here. Next
Hello.
Caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini and Michael. This is Judy from California.
Hey, Judy.
Hey, Judy.
Ashwini, a couple of years ago, we had a conversation about aging, and I have some specific content that I wanted to ask for your guidance today. When I go walking, there habitually, I mean frequently, somewhat frequently, I trip over uneven pavement. And a couple of years ago, I broke my arm, and then today, I just got a cast put on because I broke my hand. And so conditioning is now so afraid that I'm going to fall that it takes me away from being present to walking carefully.
Mm, that's such a good observation, right?
Yeah.
This is what we say, that fear doesn't stop you from walking in front of a bus. Intelligence does.
Right.
Yeah, and so that's absolutely so true, right? So if I'm off in a conversation about, I should, oh, well, watch out, Judy, don't trip over uneven pavement. So then if my attention isn't on that, I'm not here to see the uneven pavement.
Right. And then it just spirals out, you know.
And then it's about aging, right?
Yes.
Like, what has that got to do with paying attention?
Right. And I'm too old, and I should just stay in bed all the time, and then I'll get fat. You know, on and on and on, Ashwini. I mean, it just has a whole litany.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it, Judy? It does. And none of it is surprising, right? Because you've listened to it over and over again, and none of it has anything to do. And the cruelty of it, right? So it's the setup is that you're in a conversation with it, and then therefore the attention is on the conversation, and you get injured. And instead of, you know, feeling sheepish or, you know, asking, apologizing to you for having distracted you. It blames you for being distracted.
Yes, yes.
Not exactly. To mention, the last thing you need at this point, while you have a cast and are in pain and recovering from whatever the injury is for you to be in that conversation that's punishing and hateful and malicious and spiteful and fault-finding, rather mm-hmm. than, Judy, what would help you right now?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do
mm-hmm.
to make you feel okay?
Mm-hmm. So is it a constant, I mean, I can catch the conversations very easily, Ashwini. I know them, I know where they go, I know I always lead into a train wreck. And I can bring my attention back to here, or I work with a mantra a lot, but and that doesn't seem to have the same sticking power as the conversation, the ego.
Yet. That's my favorite word in practice, right? You can never say it doesn't. I mean, there used to be a time where all we did was live in the conversation, right?
Yes.
Now there is the ability to recognize the conversation and redirect the attention.
Yes.
And as we keep doing that, our ability to be here and rather than be in the conversation just simply grows.
Okay.
Right? Because it's very it's one of those absolute statements of conditioned mind to say, yeah, I'm a much more powerful conversation than life's conversation, because you know what, Judy, I can get you to look at me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is patently false, because it's no longer absolutely true. Yes.
Uh-huh. And when I look at what's true...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if I look at what's true, I don't fall more often than I fall.
Oh, what a brilliant observation. I'm paying attention more often than I'm not paying attention.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. There are so many ways in which we could injure ourselves if we were wandering around distracted in that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is true. I don't fall as often as I don't fall as often as I do fall, right?
Right.
Which is
mm-hmm.
the same thing as if I let conditioning assess my awareness practice, it's going to tell me that I'm not paying attention as much as I do pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not a conversation we want to indulge in, because if I'm looking to see whether I'm paying attention or not, I'm not here, which is what causes me to trip over uneven surfaces.
Uh-huh.
It's so not relevant. As long as, am I paying attention here in this moment? Yes. Am I paying attention here in this moment? Yes. Am I paying attention? Because it's the Joshu, the Zen story about the guy who went around saying Joshu, just to bring himself here. That was simply the practice. There's no there's only in a conversation we're talking about progress.
Okay.
Or success.
Uh-huh.
Or getting anywhere.
Okay. And what
you
I'm
have
saying
to bring all of that into the moment. Otherwise you're just here. Am I here? Yeah. Am I here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is you're saying that is that this is just another process like all the others. Somehow, you know, there was a little bit of conditioning. There was a little bit of belief in there that hooked me a little bit more. But now I listen to you and just, oh, yeah, that's just another conversation like all the other conversations. Let's get here.
That's right. And you're vulnerable, right? Because you just tripped, you fell. And
yes.
So at some level, the voices are going to make, what is it, the biggest meal out of that they can get.
Yes. Yes, that's what's
right.
happening.
Right, and so those are the times where you want to double your attention to your mantra or to here or to your recording, because if we let our attention wander in those times, then the likelihood that we're going to reinforce the groove of distraction or self-hate is more. Those are the times when I really want my attention here, so I don't, you know, slip into unconsciousness and perpetuate that circuit where the self-hate is allowed to run rampant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe I'm thinking, because it is a vulnerable time and there is some pain involved in the trauma of going out and going to a doctor and grateful, uh-huh. you know, so grateful that I have this privilege of getting care, that would be a time. It's a transition time. That would be a time when conditioning would be there louder and I would be more inclined to maybe listen because...
Right. absolutely. And so that's okay. That's a pattern that we become aware of, and that's when we double, triple, quadruple all of the supports, right? Call into the radio show, listen to my recordings, make sure that what is the focus of the attention is the care that you give yourself and that you surround yourself by, so that there's no vulnerability to the voices taking advantage of that situation.
I see. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. This was a great example of being cared for. Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that the way of taking care of you, right? Because it wasn't passive. It was getting into the queue and saying, here's what I'm looking at, and here's what happened. How do I support myself?
Ah. Oh, thank you.
There's
right.
a lot of paying attention there, right? Paying attention to what's going on, being present to what is going on. That's intelligence. That's what's going to stop us from tripping over.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. Thank you both. Thank you. Gosho.
Thanks, Judy. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Judy. And yes, Ashwini, I was saying exactly that also, the willingness, just as with the Elizabeth earlier, the willingness to get in the queue, to talk about my process, to share what I'm looking at, to get guidance on that.
Yeah, it's a magnificent process.
And I loved what you said also about yet and the power of yet. And yes, it's true that I can't do this yet, and I'm working on it.
And I'm working on it now, right?
Yes.
Those two powerful words, yet and now.
Yes, indeed. And Ashwini, we are going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Excellent.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, this is Jill in Philadelphia.
Hey, Jill.
Hey, Jill.
Hey. Well, I'm just really enjoying this call a lot. It's funny, I had a thought a few seconds ago that it just feels like a vacation to me to be on this call, you know, and I mean, with all these people that I love and care about and, you know, and it's hard to get on retreat obviously now. And so I'm just really relishing like whatever I can get, you know?
Whatever we can get. It's such a lovely orientation, right, Jill? So I can't be on retreat instead of feeling suffering over that, right? Mm. That's not how it should be, or I wish I could go on retreat. It's just, okay, well, here's what I have. Let me enjoy as much as I can, as fully as I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, just feel, and I almost don't want to talk about anything else because I'm kind of here.
Yes, here has very few words, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm in this moment. But everything, you know, everything passes. So I'm we can't hold on to anything, even that delight, as around that content. I guess I was, I'm also looking at liking and disliking, which I guess is one thing that came up on the call for me. And just looking at the process of liking and disliking, and how much it changes. I guess I'll just tell a little bit about the content. So I'm in this medical treatment, and currently my legs are very swollen, and so it's a little, everything's fine. It's not a unexpected thing, but it's just very strange to look down at my legs, which I kind of liked before and like really adored and thought they were cute and all of those things, and now they just look completely like someone else's legs. And just that experience of hearing some of the stories around that, and actually through the call just kind of getting to this place. And this is why, for me, Sangha is so critical, that just getting to this place of appreciation for them, and just starting to really, I just felt like my relationship with them suddenly changed. And it was kind of a powerful thing.
Well, it does, thing. Right, Jill? Because what I heard you say in that is, it's the sort of crux of every process that we look at, which is preferences are conditional, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the process of unconditional love allows me to appreciate the legs, regardless of my preference on how they look. And I like my legs because they look cute. Now, I don't like my legs because they look swollen. But that doesn't mean that, regardless of whether they're swollen or cute, not swollen, I can't look at them from that place of unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably, the only thing we want to say about preferences, right?
Yeah.
Well, I love pizza, but I'm not free if I can only eat spinach with artichokes and tomatoes.
Right.
And once I get the freedom, I can enjoy that, or I could choose not to eat it, or I could choose to eat some other pizza, and I'm completely free. Or as in the case of the legs, it doesn't matter what they look like, but I can choose to move to a place of the unconditional from which I'm not in the dualistic world of like versus dislike.
Mm-hmm.
And that exit is a place of well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like, a place of well-being. And and that there are these off-ramps
exactly.
in these suffering processes that we can take and be moved to. And, I don't know I guess I got there during this call, but it just feels like, that it.
And we often say that about open air, right, Jill? You could be most identified when you get on the call, but because everyone is in the process of moving from whatever identification they're in to a place of center, to a place of the privileged environment, to a place of practice, to what is authentic in themselves. Right. That's everybody's making that movement, and it's almost like resonance, right? So there's a frequency of identification. That means we get identified because that's what we're vibrating to, right? And then when we are in that collective movement towards compassion and love and center, then we get moved along because the attention shifts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just have this image of us all in a dance class, and that we're all just learning
three
those moves.
Three steps to the right, four steps to the left, arrive at center, and unconditional love and compassion, right?
Take a bow.
Take a bow, and do gassho, right?
And gassho, yeah, exactly. And I guess that's, makes sense about the feeling of just gratitude and just that sense of vacation and
well, and then we get to embrace the situation for what it is, right? So there's Jill with the a medical condition and treatment that's resulted in this, and there's a totality which isn't just reduced to, okay, well, my legs are swollen and they don't look very good.
Right.
It's okay, let's get the whole picture into account here.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Oh boy, that's a movement I've made so many times over the past few months. Oh my gosh, just mm-hmm. like this yeah. big picture, just big picture.
Yes, big picture. Yes. What and that's what happens when the attention goes to that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is what we were talking about. There's no awareness of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collapsed state of focus on something wrong, not enough. It's a horrible mm-hmm. place to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's hell on earth. Definitely.
Yeah, hell on earth.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the freedom.
Thank you. I think you just were part of that dance, Jill, where whoever just joined the call moved to center. Yeah.
May we all dance together. Yeah.
May we all dance together. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jill.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jill. And I will definitely join that dance also, Ashwini. and we have another call here.
Mm-hmm.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. It's Miriam from Eastern Canada.
Hi, Miriam.
Hey, Miriam.
I wasn't expecting to be unmuted. I've been a little curious about something. I've been working on the year long, and when we flesh out the eyes, like I am afraid, I am angry, I am kind, I am generous, those are aspects of ego. But when we're in a state of not being identified, am I still an I?
What do you think, Miriam? What is your experience?
I feel it's so strange because it doesn't feel like I'm an I, and I don't know how to refer to myself.
Yes, exactly. That's why the Buddha said there are so many ways in which we use words, right? There's the conventional sense of the word, and then there's the sense of the word and all of what it means and does not mean.
Mm-hmm. Hmm?
Because go ahead, sorry.
Well, that's it. So I was just, because it's very a recent sort of feeling, because like I was behind a big wall of resistance again, and it just came crashing down. Mm-hmm. And it feels different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just feel different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so what we a catchphrase in practice, or it's something that assists us to point to an experience, right? Which is what all of the phrases in language and practice do, because awareness does not need someone to be aware. Well, what does that mean? Right? And here's the other piece about that, right? As soon as we have this experience, we can watch the process that wants to label it, to categorize it, to define it. Because what would ask the question of, well, if I don't feel like an I, how do I, what is that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That whole movement from the experience or being to, now let's figure it out.
Yeah. So that's another aspect of ego coming into play.
Absolutely. And we call it I illusion, right? Somehow or the other, I really have to make it about me.
Okay.
I really have to make it about the I, right?
So there is no I when I'm not identified. So as soon as the I asks the question, then I'm identified again.
Well, again, you know, we never make absolute statements in our practice, because I would hesitate to confirm the first part of what you just said.
Okay.
But there is that process that I can watch that allows me to know the identification. So you have this experience of attention not on conditioned mind. You start to sense that. You start to calibrate that. And the words and language that come up for you to describe that is, it feels like I'm not somebody. As close as we can get to that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a sense of that experience. And then you have definitely a sense of the experience of when the attention goes to conditioned mind and the language that goes around that. So
yes.
That's about all we can just, we can say. That's right?
Right? Yes.
So as soon as I get to, so when I feel this way, I'm here, and when I feel this way, I'm identified, then I'm back to the conversation with Elizabeth, right?
Yes.
That's what I'm referencing in order for me to know my experience as opposed to being here for it.
Yes. Anyway, it's...
Because what wants to know? Right? How is it even helpful to know the answer to that question?
It's not, really.
It's just, does it prevent you from having one experience versus the other? No.
No.
So it's just good to look at it and go, gotcha, right?
Gotcha. Anyway, it's so much fun. It is so much fun. And I completely... relate to everything that's been said, because I went for a walk with the dog after work and I almost fell in the river because I tripped over my feet. So
uh-huh.
If I hadn't had my walking stick, I would have went in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So to just really know what we're up against, right?
Yes.
Because we can laugh about it, but that would have been, that's the stakes that are involved in every moment that we're not here.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So thank you so much and have a great evening.
You too. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Miriam. And I just love that exploration, Ashwini. It's very fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have another caller here. There we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. It's Virginia.
Hey, Virginia.
Hey, Virginia.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the call tonight. It's so inspiring and so, just heartening, touches me in my heart to just be sharing all this with all of you and all of Sangha. And it's mm-hmm. and a lot of it's just dropping in during the call tonight. So I'm not sure. I wanted to participate, so I put myself in the queue. Let's see. I was really excited. Some of the things that you talked about or touched on in the other conversations about. And also what was touched on this morning in the year-long retreat call about process, about looking to life for process rather than looking to life for a particular content response.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I haven't had a chance to go back and listen again, but I found that really thrilling to you know, to consider uh-huh. that.
So in case people were not on the call this morning, I think, Virginia, we're looking at saying yes to life, right? And oftentimes that what that traps us in is saying yes to something that is the content of life rather than saying yes as a process, right? So
yeah.
I something that I am asked to do, instinctively I don't want to do, but I say yes anyway, so I'm here for how life wants me to participate in that opportunity. But if I keep the channel of yes open all the time, I'm open to information on how it unfolds. And I sidestep that horrible conditioned place which says you're an awareness practitioner, so you should say yes to life, so you've got to say yes to everything and then be miserable.
Yeah. Thank you for saying it again, too, because it's so funny, because in at once it's very clear to me, and then you know, ego comes in and fuzzes it. So mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you, yeah.
Well, and that's an interesting process, right? Because I would project what's really, what you're noticing is where the attention is when there's clarity and where the attention is when there's no clarity. Because confusion, if we reference conditioned mind for what did I just understand, then there's no understanding. But if I reference life for what became clear, I have the clarity. So you don't have to actually put it into words in order to have, within quotes, gotten it. Because life got it.
Right, life
got
it.
And you can come from that clarity whether or not conditioned mind ever got it, right?
Yeah. I love what you're saying, because it's kind of a micro of what we were just talking about. Yeah, I love that. And there's that quality of receptivity in looking to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful word, receptivity.
Yeah. And
it's so relaxing, right?
It really is. It's really relaxing. Yes. Yeah, and I don't know. I just love what you just said. I'm just going to kind of reflect it again in that when I look to ego to see whether there's clarity, then I'm in the process of relating to ego. And when I just let life drop in, when I just let clarity be, or let life be clarity or whatever, then I don't have to be able to articulate it. I just can be with it.
You can be it.
I can
be it. You don't even have to be with it.
Uh-huh.
That's what we see, right? We are clear.
Right. Right. Yes.
There's no separation there.
Right. There's no separation. And in a way, I think what just was dropping in for me is like when we do the exercises for the year-long retreat, it's like the just doing them without referencing ego about how am I doing it, without evaluating, it sort of brings also to that place of receiving clarity being clarity. Yeah.
Yes. No, being is lovely. Being clarity. That's such a good nuance of correcting, right? Because we're accurately describing our experience. So when I do those exercises, there's a way in which I can tell if I'm looking to conditioned mind, I don't receive any information. But I'm looking to life. Mm-hmm. There's a movement you're describing in doing those exercises, which is looking to clarity, and then clarity is there. Insight drops in. Information is available in this moment for what I'm, for whatever it is that whatever I'm doing.
Right.
It's in some ways, right, Virginia, it goes back to what you started off with, which is I feel inspired. And it's not by the content that we're inspired, because that tricks us all the time. It's the place that I am that is described in those words. Whether it's inspiration or clarity, it's the same process. Inspiration is what I am, or clarity is what I am, because that's what is here in the moment.
Uh-huh.
It's seldom the content. I mean, we can say that if I said I'm listening to this conversation and feeling inspired, it's a true statement. But only conditioning would say that my sense of inspiration is because I'm listening to the clarity in I'm listening to Sangha speak, right? That's all we're looking at breaking the connection for between. Sorry, my prepositions are all over the place.
Oh, yeah. So let me make sure I understand. So that's what we're looking to break, the connection between content and feeling joy, clarity, inspiration.
The word I was looking for is the conditional connection or the causal connection. My inspiration, my feeling inspired comes from listening to Sangha.
Ah, I see. Oh, and what you're saying is this is authentic nature. This is who we truly are.
Yeah. And so when I'm here, I feel inspired, and I can appreciate the interconnectedness of the brilliance of everyone and everything that is having this conversation. Because if I was not, if I was off in a conversation, I would say, well, why did she say that? And why does she say that over and over again? And why do I have to do this? So whatever the conversation is, right, inspiration is not what I'm feeling. I'm in judgment.
Right. 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 And the conditional. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and what I mean by the conditional is the bamboozle we call if X, then Y, right? So
right.
So much the part of conditioned mind to make meaning, to make connections, to say if it's this way, then it must be because of that, right?
Right.
And the practice words that go with that is what you practice is what you have, or what you do is what you get. So
right.
If I'm clear, I'm in clarity. If I'm not clear, I'm not in clarity. It's a
right.
Like
And also then it sounds like as we unravel the conditional, that's what process is about. That's what looking from the perspective of process is about. It undoes the conditional.
It undoes the conditional. Exactly. Exactly. That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
I love that. Like, I really do. Because
right?
I just have to say real quick that process always really speaks to me when the perspective is shifted from content to process.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a lit up experience for me. And well, now I kind of understanding a little more. It's related to not having the conditions on, I think, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would say, I mean, another way of looking at it, or another way of phrasing it or articulating it for me is we resonate when we are what we are, right? Life
okay.
is process. You are process.
Right.
I get it, because there isn't something that I'm trying to be that I'm not. So it's a feeling of flow, right?
I get it when I'm not trying to be something that I'm not, that I think I have to be because there's a condition on it.
That's right.
Oh,
that's
my
the
goodness.
That's the ego, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ashwini. This is so clarifying.
And so fun, right?
And so zen, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Deepkasho.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. And there's a lot I could say about that fabulous conversation. And in the interest of time, I'm going to restrain myself, Ashwini.
Okay.
Okay, I think we have time.
Religious observances, Michael. It comes in handy when you're hosting a show. I know. Okay. One more caller.
Yes, and we have time for one more caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini and Michael. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. I know we don't have much time. I don't know how much, but I know it's not much. I was on the call today with you, Ashwini, on the year-long retreat, and talked about this process around giving and so on. And really tons of self-hate and then freedom and then back into self-hate and then freedom. And this call was going on tonight, one of the self-hate was trying to get me back. And the piece of content is the story that I just do fundraisers for the Africa Project because that's what you do in order to be a good practitioner, and that I don't really care is basically the story. And then the idea that, oh, then I share that on a call in the Sangha and then be the bad, wrong person. That would be like the most horrible thing. And so that's the story that there was so much self-hate around, and it was trying to get me back tonight. So I was just watching that whole process around that and getting back to, oh no, am I going to share that tonight if it comes up and da 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 da, you know? And watching the whole process of being in that and it not as deeply, but it's still seeming this real, you know, and the different parts, like, but just seeing that person who's so afraid of looking bad, especially looking that bad, and especially in front of the Sangha, that would be true about me. Please.
That's probably, this is the continuation of our conversation from the morning show, right, Jeff, which is the belief that we all have that we are the ego.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm confused about that, then of course I don't want to get on a call and talk about ego to the rest of Sangha, because I believe that everybody in the Sangha thinks that ego is me.
Right.
Right? I mean, the ego is concerned about that. The ego doesn't care about Africa. The ego is not what you are. And so when we look at the process of self-hate and recognize the process of self-hate, then we want, the disidentification is, that's not me. But that doesn't mean that I now have to talk to myself about I'm really a caring person, because we haven't disidentified at that point. We've just gone from self-hate, which is you know, talking to me about how awful I am, to an identification in which I'm trying to convince myself that I'm a good person. But in both cases, the person is still around, right? The disidentification is coming to that sense of what animates this form is Buddha nature. Of course it cares. It's self-evident. Of course it's generous. Of course it participates. Of course it's compassionate.
Yeah.
No,
which
I think those are the words you used. There was no question. Because
right.
what is what is, and we're present to that.
Yes. To me, what I see in what you're saying is it makes the whole conversation moot.
Oh, that's, you know, why we want to ignore it. Yeah. It's like more than two sentences, not interested in listening. I don't have to parse it. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to know. No, once I know how to recognize it, it has no more information for me. I can safely just drop it and carry on with what I'm doing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, exactly. And then sometimes it will get me again, but recognizing it, oh, that's that old conversation. And it's trying to get me. And
it might even be helpful there, Jeff, to not even use the word, it's trying to get me. Who's the me it's trying to get? Attention is on the conversation.
Wow.
Attention is here. Attention is on the conversation. Attention is here. That's really only what's happening.
Wow. Uh-huh. You're like, there really is no me.
Well,
subtler. What's
yeah,
that?
All formations are transient. All things are without a self.
Yeah. Yeah, these more subtle and subtle places where there's an idea of a me that I hadn't seen. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and there's a deep investment of ego to be the practitioner.
Oh. I might have almost seen that. Can you try that one again on me? Try that one again. Never mind that.
I'll just say that again, right? That there's a deep investment in the process of ego to cast itself as the practitioner who tries really hard to see itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I use all the pronouns in the world and the words that we use, and we're so completely not clear what's what, right?
oh my gosh, it's like I might see it for, well, there might be a seeing of it for just a moment, and then it's like covered over. But it seems like it really, what you're pointing to, it's like there's just these little glimpses.
That's what we call the space between the thoughts, where there's no ownership of seeing or being or anything else.
Wow, cool. Well, this one I think will be a good one, as all of them are, to listen to and again and again.
Yes.
Well,
good
thank you very much.
We love repetition, right, Jess?
that's a topic for another conversation, but yes, I'm working
well,
on that.
Something doesn't like it, but
yeah. Oh yeah, right, exactly. So yeah, well, thank you, Ashwini, very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Michael and Sangha. Good night.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. Another fabulous conversation, Ashwini. And I remember years ago on Open Air at the end, we would always sort of talk about our homework for the coming week. And I can see my homework is to look for the me that is doubt still lurking around there.
Yeah. We just keep going deeper and deeper, right?
Yes. Very fun. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, callers. Thank you, all of our listeners. And go happy.
Thank you, Michael. Go happy.
Thank you. Go happy.